On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's tough days for the GOP. Scandal, deficits, a brutal war, and war in its own ranks over where to go next. The Republican Party that, it seems, only yesterday saw itself as the country's permanent majority has lost both houses of Congress and now looks with alarm at the 08 presidential race. Conservatives boo John McCain. Rudy Giuliani polls strong but doesn't buy the conservative social agenda. Rush Limbaugh and Tom DeLay go on air bemoaning the party's state of affairs. Time magazine's cover has Ronald Reagan in tears. It's too soon to write off the GOP, but it's a glum day in the club. House right now. Up next on Point, Republican thinkers share their views on the GOP's deep winter of discontent. We're sitting down this hour with some keen judges of Republican politics and public support. Joining me from New York is Kellyanne Conway, Republican pollster and president and CEO of The Polling Company. Kellyanne Conway, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
We're great. It's good to have you. From Washington, we're joined by David Keene, president of the American Conservative Union. David Keene, great as always to have you with us. Thanks for being
Pleasure.
Here. And with us from Washington, Richard Viguerie, longtime conservative activist, fundraiser, and founder of the Conservative Digest. Richard Viguerie, welcome back. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Always good to be with you.
Good to have you. David Keene, let me just dive in with you first. You've said a few years ago, by your reckoning, the ship was off course. Now it's run aground. How do you see what's happening with the GOP, David?
Actually, that was my good friend Mike Pence, the leader of the Republican Study Committee in Congress, that said that, but he was right. The fact is that once the Republicans won the Congress in 1994, running as conservatives, they began to act all too human and decided in late 1995 that the most important thing in the world was not what they accomplished, but that they stay there in a majority. And as a result, they began to govern like the Democrats they displaced. And by 2006, the public said, well, we don't like you either. So a lot of them were defeated. A lot of folks stayed home. And all of those problems were, of course, compounded by an administration that hadn't done much to restrain the spending that upset many core conservatives. And on top of all that, we were involved in an unpopular war that took 3 or 4 points off the top in race after race around the country. So you had a turnover. But we still have a country that's very evenly divided, that's more conservative than not. It was not a defeat based on ideology, but a defeat based on the war and on the competence question. And Republicans can still come back if they got the message of 2006 and if they straighten out their act before 2008.
Richard Viguerie, how do you see it? Time magazine's pulled out the little computer program and put a big teardrop coming down the face of Ronald Reagan. Headline, How the Right Went Wrong. I heard Rush Limbaugh and Tom DeLay on Friday suggesting this is just a media effort to portray the Republican Party as in trouble. So is there real trouble here or an unfriendly media presenting this as trouble? How do you see it, Richard Viguerie?
Well, a number of things. I think Tom DeLay, quite frankly, is a major part of the problem. Conservatives and conservatism did not lose the 2006 election. It was liberal Republicans such as Tom DeLay, George Bush, Roy Boehnert, John Boehnert, Roy Blunt. And
liberal Republicans, this crew you're saying?
They may not think of themselves. They would strongly deny that. But by their fruits, you shall know them. And all of these gentlemen engaged in a massive expansion of government in the last 10, 12 years. The Republicans, Tom, became that which they beheld. In the late 80s, early 90s, they beheld the corruption of the Democrats, the abuse of power. And the voters agreed with them, turned out the Democrats in the 94 election. And then within a few years, the Republicans became that which they beheld. They became abusers of power. They became corrupt. And a lot of that corruption, by the way, is not just people like Jack Abramoff and Duke Cunningham, but it's the legal theft of our children and grandchildren's money. They begin to use the voters' money to try to bribe the voters and
you're talking deficits
ashes in their mouth.
Deficits you're pointing to there.
Yes, massive expansion of government for the sole purpose, Tom, of holding on to power. It was not that they believed in a massive expansion of Medicare under the prescription drug benefit, farm subsidies, but they felt that was how they would hold on to power, by bribing the voters. Mm-hmm. And it turned to ashes in their mouth. Mm-hmm.
Kellyanne Conway, you watched the polls. Poll by the New York Times last week and CBS got a lot of attention. Democrats far more likely, 3 or 4 to 1, than Republicans to be happy about their 08 choices at this point. Evidence of lots of unease within the Republican Party. How serious a ditch do you see the party in, or is it in a ditch, Kellyanne?
That poll should be welcome news to the Republican Party, because the party has become addicted to power, and hence why they lost last time. And like any addict, you first need to admit your problem. So if the Republican Party can admit that they lost those elections, not based on ideology, but based on a lack of governance, a lack of ability to, if you're going to continue with this image of the boat, to scrape off some of the barnacles off their own boat, to really throw overboard some of the nasty characters that they were protecting. But also, I think what that poll showed is that nobody is emerging as the clear front runner for 08. And I think that's a tremendous opportunity for the Republican Party to take advantage of 07 as the building year, the bridge year, in which they pick up the pieces. And while the spotlight is on Nancy Pelosi and crew, the Republican Party is regaining its moorings. In my view, it's not so difficult for the Republican Party to regain its moorings. To do so, they need to go back to their fundamentals. There are 4 major pillars on which the Republican Party is built, not least of which is a strong military, an honest currency, personal liberty, and small government, very limited government. I mean, this is very easy for them to do. If they're going to try to muck around and find all these new issues and new wave things to do, then they're probably going to continue to abandon many of the conscientious objectors, those people who usually vote Republican but stayed home last time or even voted for conservative Democrats.
Let me ask you about those 4. Strong military, but we've seen the military really with its gears practically stripped. Some within the military are saying in Iraq, currency, we're in deep hawk to China. Liberty, you've seen the complaints about that post 9/11, the Patriot Act and so on. Small government, as Richard Viguerie says, this stretch of years hasn't really seen it shrink, and the deficit's grown. So is it so easy to turn those points around when, as Ronald Reagan might have said, you know, facts are stubborn things. Those realities that have been created are sitting there.
We need some leadership, and you need some leadership by the governors, by some of the more key and more conservative, frankly, members of the House and Senate. And maybe another leader will emerge in 08. But I think there's too much focus posed on 08 by many rank-and-file Republicans now. Like, they want to find the next messiah to lead them out of this wilderness, where they should recognize that we're a bottom-up party living in a top-down world. And when we became top-down, when we forgot those 4 fundamental pillars and let them be completely perverted, that's when we lost our moorings.
What do you mean by top-down?
Well, the country is top down. It looks for leaders, and then everything is supposed to flow from that. Messages don't bubble up from the average person. They come from the major media. We get our, you know.
But in the GOP, what did top down mean? Are you saying you got the wrong message from the president, from Karl Rove? I guess they're sitting near the top.
Anybody who's sitting near the top. In other words, if you're a bottom-up party, you've got to trust the grassroots. We have to do a better job in this party, in my view, of recruiting people as state party chairs, as precinct captains, who care about the party, don't care about, you know, Rudy Giuliani having their cell phone number or someone knowing their wives' names. And that's all a natural byproduct of being addicted to power. Then you want people who are close to power, in power, to also have favor with you and invite you to fancy parties. This is not the way the Reagan Revolution was built. People did things and they didn't need their fingerprints on. They didn't need the credit. And I just say one last thing and then I turn it over to my gentleman colleagues.
Yeah.
If you need any further evidence that this country is culturally conservative, look at how the Democratic Party ran and won in 2006. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Howard Dean, Rahm Emanuel did not recruit candidates who were like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Howard Dean, and Rahm Emanuel. They recruited people who ran as conservatives. They recruited as people. I can't recall a single campaign out there in all 435 districts and 34 Senate seats and 34 governorships that were up where anybody said, if you vote for me, I will increase your taxes, increase access to abortion, and take your guns away.
I don't know
away.
About those race
Nobody
by race, but,
said
but
that.
Isn't the point here, in party terms, the key phrase, they ran and won. Then they're not Republicans. David Keene, let me put it to you. Kellyanne says, 07, let's pick up the pieces, and then let's go. Not so difficult to turn around. Do you see not so difficult a moment here?
Well, that depends on the leadership that you have and on the willingness of the party to get the message from 2006. In one sense, it's not difficult. Those who have been around a while remember 1975. The Republicans had suffered a tremendous defeat in 1974 because of Watergate, the Watergate babies, the Democrats that came in and gave that party a huge majority in Congress. The Republican Party debated changing its name. There were covers on Time and Newsweek about whether the Republican Party was going to go out of existence. Famously, the party ran ads. Remember, Republicans are people, too.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't very many of them, but I guess they were people. By 1980, the Republicans were being talked about as the dominant party in the country. The difference between 1975 and 1980 was Ronald Reagan, who in 1975 got up and said, look, we've suffered a tremendous defeat, not because of the beliefs of this party, but because of the actions of some within it. The Democrats defeated us, not by running as liberals, but by running actually as conservatives, which they did at that time. And he said, the answer is not for us to fold our tent, drop our flag, but to fly a flag of bold colors, to go out and run on our beliefs.
Mm. Kellyanne Conway is with us, a Republican pollster with the Polling Company out of New York, co-author of What Women Really Want. David Keene is here from the American Conservative Union, and Richard Viguerie, longtime conservative activist, author of Conservatives Betrayed. Let's go to Bill right now in Watertown, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hello. Can you hear me, Tom?
Loud and clear. What do you see, Bill?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me, Bill? We've got you.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. The comment I would make is that the Republican Party worships that its primary cornerstone is less government. And I don't think they deserve our vote until they learn how to create better governance. This administration has not only increased the amount of government, but there's such poor governance that they've dismantled most of the operations that that people count on.
Bill, where do you stand? Republican, Democrat, Independent? How do you come at the issue?
I'm an Independent.
And where was your vote in 06?
With the Democrats.
Yeah. Richard Viguerie, how about it? This issue of, less government, more government, competent government, please, says Bill. Better government.
Well, Bill is right that conservatives and Republicans, as far as that goes, have one need, I think, Tom, above everything else, and that is new leadership. In essence, conservatives are like the biblical Jews who had to wander through the desert for 40 years until that generation of corrupt, immoral leaders had passed away. And conservatives are not going to get to the political promised land until we have new leadership, and I think that's true of the Republicans. The present leadership there could not tie the sandals of a Ronald Reagan or Barry Goldwater. And they are about power, as Kellyanne said, and we need principled conservative leaders. And
we'll look at the leadership, but let me ask you, Richard Viguerie, about the question within Bill's question is about maybe smaller government itself. You know, the critique has been put out there. Republicans don't like government, don't respect government. Therefore, when government is needed, let's say Hurricane Katrina or effective military policy, you hear people now saying Republicans can't deliver because they don't like government in the first place. What do you say?
No, I don't think that's true across the board, Tom. I think it's this crowd that can't shoot straight. It's this Bush White House that is incompetent. You look at 8 years of Ronald Reagan, and we had an incredibly efficient, competent White House. And I think that the problem is the Republican leadership at this time that needs to be replaced, and they're the ones that are incompetent.
David Keene, how about it? Can we have smaller government and government that's up to the tasks that the country seems to need, to want?
Sure you can, Tom. Let's go back to Katrina for a second. It was the Republican conservatives in the House that at the time the president and the administration and the majority of Congress said we just need to dump billions and billions of dollars into the Gulf in order to solve the problem of Katrina. It was the Republican conservatives who said, no, you shouldn't do it that way. You've got to have controls on this money. You can't just buy house trailers and stick them out in a swamp. You can't do those things. You've got to do things in a way that harnesses the energies of people to solve problems. The majority in Congress and the White House didn't do that. We saw the result of it. But look at the various states that were involved, both in Katrina and in hurricane response.
Yep.
Louisiana was a disaster. Republicans and Democrats alike, on the ground, primarily Democrats, contributed to that disaster. Haley Barbour, a Republican governor in Mississippi, responded pretty well and became sort of the hero of the Katrina episode. And they say in Washington that over at FEMA, they pray the next hurricane will hit Florida because Jeb Bush put into place in Florida an operation that was totally capable of dealing with hurricanes as they hit. So it's not so much a question of the size of the government. It's a question, as your caller said, that given whatever government you have, you want that to run efficiently and be put together well. And I think that the experience of Katrina alone shows you that you can either screw it up or you can do it right, and the difference depends on the people and the way in which they go about it who are on the ground.
Let's hear from Alan in Florence, South Carolina. Alan, what do you see?
Good day, Tom.
Hi.
I agree. I agree with the gentleman who says my party has been addicted to power and has been essentially co-opting, you know, liberal themes to bribe the electorate. But I disagree with you, Tom, in kind of summarily dismissing the female guest who accurately pointed out that, well, Democrats are doing the same thing. They're not running and had not won this election by touting liberal themes such as advancing civil rights for homosexuals or...
It was Kellyanne Conway's point. I didn't mean to dismiss her so much, Alan, as to say, you know, Democrats in different periods have run more liberal or more centrist. I mean, Bill Clinton certainly made 8 big years out of a much more centrist way. Democrats, I guess, are obviously fully capable of moving toward that center and with Clinton or in 06 winning with it.
Yeah, but they can't win and they cannot win in the heartland, in the Midwest, in the conservative areas of California, and certainly not in the South here, by running on, you know, advancing homosexual rights, on gun control. They have to talk about tax reduction. They have to talk about, strengthening the military. And that's how they won. They won basically by saying, you know, we can run this war better. That's what John Kerry ran on in 04.
And Alan, where do you see the comeback for the GOP here? What's it going to take?
It is going, you know, that's obviously above my pay grade. But I would like to see Republicans, basically send home the Bush tax cuts, make those permanent. I don't see why someone over the age of 65 is entitled to pharmaceuticals. I can see where needy elderly, the expansion of Medicaid or Medicare.
Right. So another complaint there about too big. Alan, thanks for your call. Kellyanne Conway, Alan's rooting for you there. Let me ask, you have said when it comes to, everyone's talking about leadership, you've said when it comes to 08 hopefuls, one of the things that people are going to have to do, whether it's Giuliani or McCain or Romney or you name it, right on down the line, they're going to have to stand up and announce where they stand on George W. Bush's positions, on his policies. Is that an opportunity or a peril for Republicans looking at 08?
It's a necessity. I'm surprised the media don't ask more of those questions. They seem so obsessed about the Iraq War and abortion and gay rights, that they never asked the obvious questions of the 08 contenders, which is, what part of the George W. Bush legacy do you intend to move forward?
Well, the Iraq War is a pretty big part of that, right?
Well, but what part of his management and his vision for the Iraq War and the democratization of that entire region will be part of your administration? And what part will you completely gut? And what part will you modify and tinker at the edges and make your own? And they're not really being asked that. But here's what is great for every Republican about 2008. It is, rather than wonder who you're for, we should all be focused on what we're for. A bloody, bruising primary where everybody is forced to account for his or her past statements, votes, lack of votes, and everybody is asked to account for where they stand on issues. We didn't have that in the 2000 elections because George W. Bush had wrapped up the nomination by 1998, mm-hmm. and I fought many Republicans for that. That, you know, the Republican Party was looking for the next Ronald Reagan, and in looking for a Reagan, they chose a Bush, and a Bush they eventually got. And the fact with that is that many people just were so hungry to beat Clinton and reclaim the White House that they did not really focus on the cost of the prize they were seeking. Less than a year away from the first primary and caucuses, and this is anybody's race. You're going to see new candidates come into this race in the summer and fall, and they will, maybe they'll have a lack of money, but they will have all the excitement and all the earned media they can muster. And
who are you looking to, their Brown back, or where are you looking?
He's already in the race. Yeah. He's already a declared candidate. But the point is, I was glad to see that so many Republicans told the New York Times and CBS News are not satisfied with the choices, because you're not exactly meeting somebody for a cup of coffee. You're marrying them for life here when you pick a president. And it's a very serious commitment, and nobody should just ask, well, who can win and who do I like and who seems charismatic? I think the Republicans should just purge the word charisma from their vocabulary. Who cares if the person is black, white, green, female, male, has three heads, is bald, is tall? All that is just, it's just so pat and so trite when you compare it to the issues that are facing this world.
David Keene, how about it? Bring on the bloody brawl. It's just what Republicans need now. Do you see it that way?
I do, as a matter of fact, and I think that that Kellyanne puts it just right when she says that primary voters, the Republican core believers, ought to be asking what it is they're going to get from these candidates, not who it is that they're going to nominate. You know, the political marketplace is much like the consumer marketplace. What you see now is that if you have a candidate or if you have a product that consumers aren't going to buy, one of two things is going to happen. The manufacturers of the product are going to go back and retool it so it has greater appeal to the consumer, or new products are going to come on the market. And what we see now is candidates who are saying, you know, I'm running for the support of a conservative Republican Party, and I better get my act in line with those. Now, if in doing that, if those candidates are credible in retooling, and if they make promises that can be believed, then maybe they deserve support. If they can't, that marketplace is going to draw new products into it, and whoever gets nominated is going to have to make his or her peace with the Republican conservative base.
And yet we've seen Giuliani out front in the polls.
It has been, but usually if they're forced to the wall, and if there is a bruising battle, and if there is competition, the candidate who comes out of it is going to make commitments that he's going to have to stick with.
We'll look at those front runners at the moment and where they stand. Let me get a call first from Des Moines, Iowa. And James, hi, James, you're on the air.
Hello. I refuse to allow the opposition to frame my position. It's the Republican Party that's interested in whether they're black or brown or female or homosexual. And to say that the Democratic Party is for homosexual rights, we're for human rights. Compassionate conservatism is an oxymoron, and Democrats just believe that everybody, not just the rich, not just the entitled, not just the bigoted, not just the prejudiced, but everybody ought to have an opportunity to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
James, it sounds like you're a Democrat. You're in Iowa. Looking on at the Republican state of affairs right now, do you feel heartened? How about the mood of your Republican fellow citizens out there?
I'm a yellow dog Democrat, and I believe that one of the advantages of having Iowa early is that it forces the candidates in both parties to be in back room, front room, side room where they have to take questions from people like me, not where they can walk into a 10,000-person crowd and ignore the issues of the day.
So don't characterize your party for you. Thank you, you say in Des Moines. And James, we appreciate your call. Let's get a call from Spokane, Washington. Michael, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
First, I want to say that I'm privileged to be on with Richard Vickery. I saw him prior to the 2004 election when most Republicans were talking about a permanent majority, and he predicted the wheels were going to come off the bus because conservatives had been betrayed. But my question is, it seems like the Republican Party has two wings that are actually in conflict with each other.
Mm.
There are the fiscal conservatives that want small government,
yep,
and the social conservatives that want to impose their views on the rest of the nation, which is actually in conflict with small government.
Because they might want to use government to do that, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, first, do your guests see it that way? And secondly, you know, how do you resolve that and get a party that actually can get back in the majority?
Let us pick it up, Michael. Richard Vickery, there's a fan in Spokane, Washington. What do you say to his question? Is there a built-in conflict there?
Well, I first of all want to thank Michael for mentioning the title of my book, Conservatives Betrayed, which I had forgotten to introduce here, but I wrote a book about all the things that we're talking about here called
And Kellyanne for saying that bald guys are okay.
Yes, exactly.
Everybody's happy now.
To lead.
Well, what about the question, Richard?
No, I don't believe that there's a conflict. The previous caller talked about compassionate conservatism is an oxymoron, and I think every conservative would agree with that, and we're very disillusioned with compassionate conservatism. Ronald Reagan carried 42 states the first time he ran and 49 states the second time. George Bush, with compassionate conservatism, carried his both elections by one state. And America wants basically to be left alone. They've got lives to live and mortgages to meet and kids to educate.
But doesn't Michael in Spokane have a point? I mean, George Bush is not responding to nothing here. In the last years, the deficit's grown pretty big. He's saying when you try and push a social conservative agenda through the government, that in itself pumps up the government.
Well, I haven't seen this president push through a social agenda. I've seen him push through a socialist government where you massively expand the entitlement programs such as Medicare, farm subsidies. I mean, just one program after another, federalize education. This has been a president that has governed from left of center and a Republican Congress that has gone along with that. Not only did they expand government, they made zero attempt to reduce any significant government agency or program. This has been a government of, by, for, and behalf of Wall Street, corporate America. Anything that would expand the government is what this president went about doing. And when we had Ronald Reagan trying to reduce the size of government, the American people responded and gave him two overwhelming victories.
Right now we've got Jeff calling from Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for taking my
yeah.
call. I'd just like to say I agree with everything Richard Vickery just said about the Bush presidency. My comment is I had been a lifelong conservative Republican till the age of 45, until I actually voted for George Bush in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And then September 11th, when he took the country to war on false grounds, it became clear what kind of a – it started to become clear what kind of an administration – they were running. I have since switched my affiliation, and I don't think I'll be voting Republican again anytime soon.
Never forgive, never come home, Jeff?
Well, if they return the principle, my problem with the Republicans now is that they are all political, Rove and Company, nothing but people with an agenda who do not listen to the American people. They don't listen to real conservatives like Harry. And if they come back to principle, then I might come home.
Until
they come back to principle, I'm going to vote for someone who does have principle.
and sitting out on the GOP side. Richard Vigory, Kellyanne Conway says a bloody Donnybrook may be good, can pick up the pieces, and maybe it sort of clears the undergrowth for 08. You've been quoted here in Time magazine saying, forget 08, we're not going to be back to the Republican Party, not back to its glory until 2016. That's a long time.
Well, Tom, I wouldn't say forget about 2008. I don't think that that's something that you ought to do, is forfeit any election. But my advice to conservatives is don't put all your eggs in the 08 election. One of the strengths, one of the many strengths of the conservative movement since I've been involved in the early 60s, was that we've always approached politics as a marathon, not as a sprint. And if we prevail in 08, that's fine. But I think it's going to take 6 to 10 years before we can restart the conservative movement and govern America, not just by electing a Republican president, but having a conservative president, a conservative House, Senate, state legislators, conservative governors. And that's going to take some doing. It's not going to happen in the next 15 to 20 months. And so I think that conservatives can govern America. In my lifetime, conservatives have taken over the Republican Party three times, 1964 with Goldwater, 1980 with Reagan, and 1994 with the Gingrich Revolution. And we can do it again, and this time we can govern America. But it's not likely to happen in the next few months.
You're talking maybe more than 8 years. Nick's calling from Waltham, Massachusetts. Nick, what do you see?
Thanks, Tom. First off, I think the root of the problem is an epidemic, and it's an epidemic of retarded emotional development.
Whose? What are you talking about?
Well, I think that is the root of a lot of the problems. These people just never grew up.
These people? You mean the whole Republican Party, half the country?
Well, many of them. I think also some of the saddest people are the moderate Republicans. If I'm not mistaken, Eisenhower was a Republican, and I remember back several decades ago, I'm 71 now, I remember several decades ago when Republicans were decent people. I'd like to toss a quick poem in your direction.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a change of pace. Let's hear it.
Greed is sacred. Hypocrisy divine. Incompetence is mandatory. And lying is routine procedure.
Nick, we're reaching for the poetry, and maybe we've got it, and maybe we don't. Kellyanne Conway, you hear the complaint.
As my old friend Bob Dole used to say, I guess we should put him down as undecided.
Well, no, it's pretty clear, but you know, Kellyanne, Nick is not alone in feeling that there's something really wrong here. I mean, we're hearing all kinds of versions of what it is today, but he's saying something got really nasty. It's clear things got pretty nasty in recent years. A bunch of it did come from the Republican side of the aisle. Why has that happened? Why, in a moment of glory and triumph in the mid-90s, did it veer in that direction? Even now we've got Tom DeLay. You know, he's back, and he's throwing stones at Newt Gingrich again already. What about the nastiness factor? Where did that come from?
First of all, shock, awe, and nastiness is what sells books. And secondly,
but it was in the halls of Congress. You've heard
people,
it.
I'm sorry. People also want their legacies to be. They want to have some control over their legacies. They don't want someone else to write what their contributions were or lack thereof, and to distort the truth or distort history. And I think it goes back to the fundamental view that apparently all three of us hold on this program, which is that power can be a very corrupting influence. Even if you're not unethical and doing something criminal, there's something still very untoward about your conduct and about your the perversion of your principles and your priorities after you've been at the top for too long. And it goes with the old saying, if you're a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. And that really very much applies to power in Washington, where if you've got it and you can wield it for a long time, you really lose perspective.
But the GOP wasn't in power on Capitol Hill that long before some of these problems emerged. I mean, the Democrats had been there for many decades. The GOP, we're talking 94. It's only, even now, it's only 12, 13 years later.
In my view, one of the worst things that happened to the Republican Party was the departure of Newt Gingrich as Speaker and from the entire House of Representatives. Here's a man who brought the Republican Party from the minority wilderness into the majority with a 10-point plan of action. Like it or not, it was in writing. They swore to it, and it gave people a roadmap to cut out of TV Guide and hang on their refrigerators and hold to account the Republican Party. And had some really simple couple items in there, like term limits, balanced budget amendment, had no social issues, if anybody remembers. And when Newt Gingrich lost, when his Republican Party lost five seats, yet held on to the majority in 1998, his own people threw him overboard. And then what? They were sort of rudderless for a while, leaderless. And I think that's also why you see this nascent movement to draft Newt into the presidential race, only because when you go around this country, there are people who are in the 20s, 30s, and 40s in 1994, in 1988 when he started his leadership at GOPAC. Here's somebody who had leadership tapes, cassette tapes that people popped in and they learned how to think like a conservative and how to act like a Republican and what to do. And we really haven't seen the likes of that in quite a while.
So what do you think about Newt now? Now he's gone to James Dobson, said, I'm sorry I was having an affair with my congressional aide while I was chastising Bill Clinton over Monica Lewinsky, and a lot of talk about Newt Gingrich coming back in. Would you welcome that? Would you welcome Newt in the race, Kellyanne?
Well, Newt's in the race already insofar as he's a very important voice, one of the most important, in my view, for the Republicans in 2007. He has much to say. And whether he gets in the race or not, I actually think if he got in the race today, it would mute his voice a little bit because then he's running for office. But he is critical of this administration when he feels like it is important. He is supportive of them when he believes that he should be based on principle. And the way I read his comments is his presence alone out there as a voice means that the intellectual heft of the entire debate is necessarily raised. It's going to be more difficult for people to get away with mealy-mouthed pablum and a lack of specifics and a lack of solutions if Newt Gingrich is out there. But not to put too fine a point on it, I'm a little concerned and somewhat confused as to why, even in the event of some of your callers, Tom, they say, well, the Republican Party has lost its way, it's lost its principles, therefore I voted Democrat. I mean, that seems very odd to me, that the Republican Party is no longer conservative enough or honest enough to its moorings that I now have gone all the way to the other side.
But can't you see a point at which people might look at war, at deficits, if that's their hot button, at scandal and indictments and say, I mean, good thing we have a two-party system. I've got choices.
Oh, sure. Well, if you call that a choice, sure. I think it's like shopping in a Soviet supermarket. Yeah, one choice or the other sometimes. Well, no, and here's why. Because the Democrats did a smart thing, Tom. As said earlier, they ran conservative candidates. And if a Republican is trying to be just a little bit different from a Democrat, they're going to lose in some of these marginal districts. If you're trying to beat vanilla by being French vanilla or even honey vanilla, you're going to lose. You have to really show contrast and be Rocky Road. And when these Republicans were trying to move to the center, they bumped into Democrats who had already moved to the center.
Let's look at the front runners in the presidential campaign already. David Keene, take us in first to the top three here. How do you look at Rudy Giuliani, at John McCain, at Mitt Romney?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we did a straw poll at the Conservative Political Action Conference this year. We do that as we run up to each presidential race. And the winner there was Romney. The runner-ups were Giuliani and Sam Brownback.
And McCain was actually booed, if I read correctly here, when his name came.
There were a lot of reasons for that. But I will say this, that if you look at these guys, but my point was what we do is we break down the attendees by what their most important issues are into the three groups that make up the conservative coalition, the social issues conservatives, national defense conservatives, and the small government conservatives. Among those groups, Brownback won the social conservatives. Giuliani won the National Defense Conservatives, and Romney won the Small Government Conservatives, which makes some logical sense given their initial appeals. The problem that all of these fellows have is that it's very difficult for any of them to reach out beyond that segment that they can appeal to. And if you're going to be the nominee of a party that consists of a coalition, and all parties do, you have to have some appeal to all segments of the party. And one of the reasons that conservatives, broadly speaking, are not satisfied with the candidates is not just that there isn't a Ronald Reagan out there, but that at this point, none of these candidates has the kind of broad appeal on a series of issues of great concern to conservatives that would lead them to really get fired up about them.
Do you think they're going to morph into having that, one of them,
well,
or somebody else entirely in from the wings? What are you expecting?
No. They're going to. You can see that, for example, Rudy Giuliani, who has a a very liberal record on social issues like abortion is now saying, well, if I were president, I would appoint judges like Scalia and Roberts and the rest. That's the mirror image of what they did with Casey in Pennsylvania, who up there said, well, Casey's pro-life, but he would opt for liberal judges, and that's the whole issue. And that might work. The question is, as he makes that kind of a commitment, is he credible? Mm. That's what a campaign is about. Romney has made some changes. The question is, how do you get to the end, appeal to all segments there, and put together the coalition you need to win? If these guys don't do it, and that's why there are other people waiting in the wings, if they don't do it or can't do it, or if they're not credible in trying to do it, then somebody else is going to step in, a Newt Gingrich, a Fred Thompson, or Lord knows there are other names being mentioned publicly and privately, and we're going to have a contest to see who best represents the breadth of the Republican Party.
Richard, how do you see, as Kellyanne said earlier,
I think that's good.
How do you, Richard, see the top three or four or five?
Well, Tom, the reason the Time magazine story ran, the New York Times poll results came out the way they did, conservatives are unhappy with the candidates out there, the 10 or 12, is because they all, at this point in time, failed the Goldwater and Reagan test. Goldwater became Goldwater because he and he alone stood up in the late 50s, early 60s, and spoke truth to power and said the Republicans, Eisenhower, were governing left of center. He said Eisenhower was running a dime store New Deal on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Where is this Republican presidential candidate who has spoken truth to power when we desperately needed it in the last 8 to 10 years? And when we saw Reagan, not only did we see him at all of our functions, he walked with us, but when we saw him, we saw our friends all around him. We saw Len Nofsinger, Ed Meese, Marty Anderson, Dick Allen, Judge Clark.
You haven't seen enough conservatives around George Bush?
I don't see any conservative leaders around any of the major players.
Or the new crew.
And if they're not around them, Tom, if they're not around them the last 5 or 10 years, there's no reason we should expect that we would be around these people if they were to move into the White House. So they all fail the Goldwater-Reagan test, and that's why we're looking for somebody else to maybe come on the scene.
Like here. Who? Is Newt Gingrich the answer to that problem for you?
Newt would be an interesting person to add to the mix. I think most conservatives would like to see him in the race, and we'll see where we go. But none of them has, not even Newt, quite frankly, has been a conservative leader in the last 8 to 10 years, standing up to the Republican leaders as a massively expanded government in the White House and in the Congress. And also, Tom, my website, conservativesbetrayed.com, ran an online poll, which we're still running now, in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And the number one reason that conservatives have given as the reason Republicans lost the 2006 election was because of the silence of conservative leaders. And conservatives made a serious mistake by becoming an appendage, an arm of the Republican Party, and I think that's part of the problem. Well, people are just tired of that.
They're loud today. Let me get one more call here from North Conway, New Hampshire. Paul, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What do you know, Paul?
I got a question. It appears that the extreme elements grab a hold of both parties right now, and those of us in the middle are forced to be galvanized on issues that really aren't important to us. For instance, for Republican parties, it's fiscal It's fiscal responsibility. It's foreign policy.
Those aren't important to you? Sure, those must be important to you.
No, those are important. We're forced to be galvanized on these social issues that really people don't feel like are what our government is supposed to be telling us what to do.
Paul, that's an important question. Our time's short. Kellyanne Conway, what about it? To win, to come back, do social issues go down on the Republican agenda, or do they go higher again?
It's an excellent insight that's not unusual for people who consider themselves more politically independent and refuse to pledge allegiance to either party. Mm-hmm. No, if the Republican Party modifies its position on social issues, it will lose even more rank-and-file voters than it has hemorrhaged already. And frankly, with very few exceptions, most of the serious Republican candidates are socially conservative. You'll never find a social conservative able to run on the Democratic side.
Giuliani's got the top numbers right now, and he's not on abortion,
I said,
on gay rights.
With few exceptions. Well, 70% of self-identified social conservatives told Newsweek in a poll 2 weeks ago that they either guessed incorrectly or did not know Rudy Giuliani's positions on social issues. Why would they know he was mayor of New York and they know him through 9/11? But listen, they're not going to not know 6 months from now. So that's something he's going to have to deal with.
David Broder says don't write the GOP off yet. Do you think the GOP can still win in 08, Kelly?
Oh, it can, and I hope it does. But let me say this. Democrats have stopped talking about abortion so much, and they are stopped fighting these marriage amendments. They're trying to win. They're trying to grow their majority and win in 08 based on Iraq.
Well, there's some of the word from inside the GOP tent, and we're grateful to each of you for helping us here at Kellyanne Conway at the Polling Company, author of What Women Really Want. Kellyanne, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Richard Viguerie, author of Conservatives Betrayed, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
And David Keene at the American Conservative Union. Thanks for being here, David.
Anytime.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.